Day 8. Sipes's Manor. Kevin Thompson was extremely happy to see the first rays of sunlight. It had been a real hardship trying to stay awake through the night, and he was happy to get the little bit of relief that came from Chris, Senator Jenkins's aide, in the wee hours of the morning. He drove around the property, walked around the outside of Sipes's property, looking for any signs of mischief. There were none. He looked at his watch and figured that in a few minutes Norman Sipes would be on his way to either his lawyer's office or to the congressional hearing he had been subpoenaed to appear in front of. He was actually looking forward to this part of his duties ending and to be on his way to join back up with Sean and Nicole. After 15 minutes had passed, Sipes exited his home and walked to the Lincoln Town car that had been parked in the same spot since Thompson had arrived. Sipes turned to say something to his butler, and then walked around to the driver's side of the car. He opened the passenger side door to the back seat and threw his briefcase onto the back seat. He opened the driver's side door and maneuvered his big body behind the steering wheel. He reached out and closed the car door. Then it happened. With the turn of the key to start the car bomb exploded. The very loud explosion rocked the windows of Sipes's house and Thompson's car. A plume of black smoke and orange flames reached as high as the roof of Sipes's Manor. House alarms, set off by the shockwave, began to screech all around Thompson, who was just now uncovering his head, which he had shielded out of reaction more than necessity. There was no escape for Norman Sipes. Thompson watched the flames and knew that nothing would be left that would point anyone in the direction of the serpent. Through the flames, he could see someone peering through the door and figured it had to be Sipes's butler. Thompson started his car, leaving the scene to inform Jenkins of the incident. David rushed to the door after regaining his footing in the hallway of the mansion. He broke the door off the last hinge to see the town car engulfed in flames. He quickly retreated inside to call for emergency help. As he headed back to the front door, he saw the envelope that Sipes had given him two nights before. He picked it up and placed it with some personal possessions in his room. He would do as Sipes had requested. He would deliver the package to Tony Schaffer as soon as he could get away. David stood watching the car burn, and when he heard the sirens of the fire engine approaching, he pushed the button that would open the front gate. It was like a dream. Everything was moving in slow motion. One of the firemen moved him out of the manor's doorway to the back of one of the ambulances. He had not even been aware that he had injured his hand removing the door from the hinge. While David was sitting on the bumper of the ambulance, a police officer approached him. David tried his best to answer the questions being asked. He was visibly shaken, and as the reality that his employer had just been murdered began to sink in, he could feel his fears begin to grow. He wanted to flee. He hadn't done anything wrong, but he also didn't want to think that he could be next. The police officer said his name a number of times to get his attention again. No, he didn't know of anyone who wanted his employer dead. No, there had been nothing out of the ordinary, overnight, or the day before. He provided the police with the names of those who had visited over the past week. Although David was not intentionally trying to omit anything except the manila envelope, he did forget to mention the car detailer who had insisted that Sipes had made an appointment with him and had just forgotten to tell David. The man had come during the time when Sipes had given David strict orders not to be disturbed, so he had let the gentleman in to wash and buff the car. He paid the man very little attention, and the man had been gone within 2 hours. The old coot was strange that way. He often forgot appointments. David truly gave it no thought. The forensic unit arrived. The gory, meticulous search for clues and evidence would begin shortly. The police conducted a few searches around the premises to secure them, placing the yellow crime scene tape in plain view. Neighbors were gathering, and the press began to circle and report from the scene. The firefighters had extinguished the flames, but the remains were too hot for anyone to touch as yet. A smoldering blue, wispy mist eerily circled the embers of the car. David wondered if that was the soul of Sipes, hanging around in confusion about what just occurred. A police officer informed David that the property was being considered a crime scene and that he could no longer stay at the mansion. David asked if he was allowed to return to his room to pack a bag and gather some personal items. He was granted that opportunity. and he walked, still in shock, to his room. Into the suitcase went some clothes and the mysterious manila envelope. The police escorted him to a squad car, which drove him to a nearby hotel. He, of course, was told that he shouldn't plan on going anywhere, as the police were sure to have additional questions as the investigation proceeded. He was free to come and go, but not allowed to leave the D.C. area. David checked into the hotel. He unpacked his bag and decided to shower. He thought the shower would help clear his head. He knew he needed to get that envelope to Tony Schaffer, but it could wait until after he showered. Capitol Hill. Thompson arrived at Senator Jenkins' office and walked in to see Chris on the phone. He hung up the phone in a few minutes, finishing the conversation with an aide in another senator's office. "Is Senator Jenkins in his office?" Thompson asked when Chris hung up the phone.
"No, he's in the committee room, waiting for Sipes to arrive," Chris answered.
"Sipes won't be appearing before the committee. He's dead," Thompson said. "Where can I find the senator?"
"You'll need clearance, but I can make those arrangements."
Chris gave him directions to the committee hearing room. He then picked up the phone and made a call. Thompson waited until Chris nodded his head to acknowledge that his clearance was granted. Thompson walked into the committee room and directly to Senator Jenkins, who saw him enter and excused himself from the conversation he was having with two other senators.
"Senator Jenkins, might I have a word in private?" Thompson asked as he met Jenkins in the center of the committee room.
The senator took him by the arm and motioned to an area where they could have a quiet conversation.
"I assume, since you are here and Sipes is not, that our friend was successful in his mission?" Jenkins asked in whisper.
"If you mean that Sipes is dead, then you are correct," Thompson answered bluntly.
"How?"
"It was a car bomb. I'm sorry I missed it. There was a visit from a car detailer, but I didn't put two and two together," Thompson answered.
"It seems the Serpent is very resourceful.
Sean was certain Sipes wouldn't be alive for very long, so I don't think it is a reflection on you." Jenkins thought for a moment.
"In any case, you need to get down to North Carolina, as Sean requested."
"Yes, I do," Thompson agreed. "The D.C. police are securing the scene, and if you need anything, call Chief Bailey and tell him I sent you."
"Thank you. Will you give a message to Nicole? Tell her that we have some interesting evidence coming in from her friends in Alaska. We need to obtain a few more photos, but we are pretty sure we know who is drilling there. Also tell her we are actively working the case."
"You know she's going to ask who you suspect is doing the drilling."
"Yes, but until I see it with my own two eyes, I won't say who it is." Jenkins smiled.
"I just want to reassure her that we are actively working the case. Safe travels, and you have my sincerest wishes that I see the three of you again." He extended his hand, and Thompson accepted it.
"Me too.
Keep sharp," Thompson answered as he left the committee room. Jenkins headed to the front of the room where the senators and congressmen were standing, discussing various legislation. Jenkins took his spot behind the chairman's desk and gaveled the room to order. Everyone moved to their seats, and a silence fell over the room. Jenkins sat for a second, letting the weight of the silence linger.
"My fellow senators, congressmen, and congresswomen," he paused, looking at the members of the committee, "it is with sincere regret that I have to inform this committee that Norman Sipes was killed this morning."
Gasps filled the committee room with exclamations of disbelief.
"There is an investigation occurring, as I am addressing you, by the D.C. police. At this time, I am adjourning this hearing for today. Thank you for your time and understanding."
Jenkins gaveled the committee hearing to a close and rushed out of the room, not stopping to talk to anyone. He quickly walked back to his office, where he met Chris, who was just leaving the office.
"I'm on my way to National, sir. Do you need anything?"
"I just need that important cargo as quickly as you can, Chris. I am asking you to be very careful. There is a lot here that just isn't adding up," Jenkins said as he headed into his office.
After he walked into his inner office, he picked up the phone and began dialing.
When the line was picked up, he said, "Hello, this is Senator Jenkins. Is John available?"
He waited for the answer on the other end.
"Yes, could you get word to him that I need to talk with him as quickly as he can call me back?"
"Perfect. Thank you, Anna. I appreciate all you are doing to help us."
"Yes, well, we really need to shut this down. Thank you. Goodbye."
He hung up the phone and pulled out a folder from his desk drawer. He opened another drawer and retrieved a legal pad of paper. He began to write down some names, starting with President Andrews.
Washington, D.C. David arrived at the offices of Rosen, Schaffer, and Pruitt, paying the taxi before heading inside the building with what he could only surmise to be Sipes' last will, or maybe some last-minute changes to his will. It was all too surreal for David. He just wanted to deliver this envelope and get back to his hotel room. He wanted this all to end. He rode the elevator up to the 15th floor, where the doors opened to the reception area of the law offices. Tony was at the reception desk, and he wasn't happy.
"Gene, I don't care who you have to call. Call Chief Bailey or that ex of hers, the Secret Service agent. Hell, I don't give a fuck if you call Senator Jenkins. Someone has got to know where she is."
He paused when he saw David.
"David, what are you doing here?"
"You haven't heard, then?" David asked.
"Heard what?"
"The general's dead. It was a car bomb."
Jean gasped, and a desperate, "Oh no," escaped her lips.
"What?"
Tony exclaimed in disbelief.
His world was falling apart. First the president's assassination, then Carol Gartner's murder, Nicole's disappearance, and now his friend Norman Sipes murdered by a car bomb. He wondered who would be next.
"Just what the hell is going on here?"
he yelled, his trademark composure still eluding him.
"I have no idea," David answered. "I was instructed on Saturday by the general to deliver this envelope to you if anything should happen to him. I have no idea what it is, and frankly, I want to keep it that way."
He extended his hand that held the envelope toward Tony.
"So, here it is. This is my last official duty for General Sipes."
Tony accepted the envelope and watched David turn to the elevator and wait for the doors to open. When the doors finally opened, David entered and depressed the button to the ground floor, and what he now considered his freedom from all that had happened. Tony stood looking at the envelope, then at the elevator doors.
"Amazing," he uttered. "The elevator never gets there that quickly when I need it."
He looked at Jean, who was giving a little smirk behind the hand over her mouth. Tony shook his head and headed back to his office. As he opened the door to the aisle that led to his office, he turned to Jean and demanded,
"Get me Senator Jenkins on the phone now. I'll be damned if he gets away with this."
Tony reached his office and grabbed his remote. He turned on his television to a local news station. There was the live report outside of Sipes' manor. He could barely see the burned-out shell of Sipes' town car through all the commotion, police, and forensic vehicles. The reporter was giving sketchy details, but it was true. Norman Sipes was dead, murdered by what appeared to be a car bomb. Tony walked to the bar and poured himself a whiskey. He opened the mysterious envelope delivered by David. He shook the contents onto his desk. It was a VHS tape. On the label was Tony's name, followed by a phrase that Sipes liked to use far too often in their conversations. They were four little words that drove Tony crazy. "For your eyes only," Tony read them out loud. "Even from the grave, you still manage to drive me crazy." He took a drink of his whiskey. "All right, you old kook. Let's see what this is about." Tony walked over to his VHS recorder, turned it on, and inserted the tape. There was Sipes' desk in his study. Sipes appeared as he walked to his desk and sat down. He lifted his drink and said, "Tony, if you are viewing this, then I'm dead." Sipes saluted him with the glass in his hand and then took a drink. Tony sat down in disbelief.
"If you are not sitting down, my friend, I suggest you do so," the recording of Sipes said. "I have a lot to tell you. You may need some paper, so I'll wait until you get your typical yellow legal pad. I always wonder if you were just doodling on that paper." Sipes laughed. "Go ahead. I'll wait."
Tony did as Sipes instructed and returned to his chair.
"Hold on, my friend. What I'm about to tell you is going to really rock that Puritan world of yours."
Capitol Hill. The phone rang in Senator Jenkins' office. Jenkins answered it, knowing his aides were dispensed elsewhere.
Senator Jenkins's office.
Bobby, it's John.
John, thanks for getting back to me so quickly. I just wanted to tell you of a development here and caution you. Norman Sipes is dead. A car bomb went off this morning in his driveway. He was on his way to my hearing, but obviously he never made it off his property.
Are you shitting me? John answered in disbelief.
No, unfortunately. I need to ask this. Do you think that any of the...
No, no way. These folks up here aren't like that, Bobby.
They have been very helpful, and from everything I can tell, are adhering more to our laws than the fucking oil company is, John answered before Jenkins could finish his question. Okay. John, get what we discussed and then get the hell out of there. Don't take any unnecessary chances, Jenkins warned. I don't like how this is going down, and I honestly don't think I can influence any of it.
I'll do that, John confirmed.
Has Chris received the package yet? He is retrieving it now, Jenkins answered.
Good. I expect that I'll be back within 24 hours. Goodbye, Senator.
John didn't wait for Jenkins's goodbye. The line went dead before Jenkins could utter another word. As soon as Jenkins hung up the phone, it rang again. Senator Jenkins's office. He got a strange kick out of answering his phone that way. There was always a pause on the other end as the caller recognized his southern accent. We need to get you more help, came the response from the other end of the call. It was Senator Barker. It's almost lunchtime. What do you say we get a bite to eat and discuss next steps? I think that would be a very good idea. I'm expecting my aide back shortly. Give me about 30 minutes. I suppose I don't have to emphasize that it be a private location. Those are my thoughts, too. Meet me in the rotunda in 30, then. Barker hung up. It seems no one has the time to say goodbye anymore, Jenkins thought. He returned the phone to its cradle. The list of names he had been scribbling while talking to John and then Senator Barker included all who had been killed since President Andrews. These names were on the left side of the paper. There were lines leading over to a column of names on the right of people whom Jenkins had had contact with over the same period. He then started listing names in the center. First was Senator Barker, who mentored Jenkins. He was very well respected on Capitol Hill and beyond. Under Barker's name, he wrote one more, one he had hesitated to put on the list from the beginning. He wrote Nicole just as the phone rang once more. Senator Jenkins's office? Jean sounded every bit as shy as she was in person.
I have Mr. Tony Schaffer for Senator Jenkins, she said.
She had been trying to reach the senator for more than 30 minutes, always receiving a busy signal. She hadn't been expecting what she heard next. This is Senator Jenkins. Can I help you?
Oh, Senator, I'm sorry. I wasn't expecting you to answer your own phone.
This made the senator smile.
Can I ask you to hold one moment for Mr. Schaffer? I'm sorry for the inconvenience.
The inconvenience of talking with Mr. Schaffer or being put on hold. He could almost hear the laughter in Jean's voice when she answered.
I was referring to the inconvenience of making you wait while I put you on hold, sir.
I'll wait, thank you, Jenkins answered, with a smile on his face. Jean buzzed Tony's office. Tony turned the television off. He had been sitting in shock, watching the snow that had been dancing on the television screen since the tape from Sipes had stopped playing. The phone ringing had broken his shock at what he just viewed, bringing him back to the present. He walked to his desk and depressed the speaker button. Yes, he asked, somewhat perplexed.
Mr. Schaffer, I have Senator Jenkins for you.
What? Oh, yes, Jenkins, Tony reminded himself. Thanks, Jean. The phone signaled that Jenkins was on the line with a short beep. Senator Jenkins, thank you for taking my call. It is my pleasure, Mr. Schaffer. What can I do for you? Jenkins answered, detecting that there was something different in Tony's voice. Allow me first to offer my condolences on Norman Sipes' death.
Yes, thank you. I was about to...
Tony wasn't thinking clearly. I'm sorry, Senator. Would it be possible to schedule some time with you later today or even tomorrow? My aide isn't in the office right now. Can I have him call you back to arrange a time? Yes, of course, Tony answered, trying to regain his composure. May I inquire as to the topic of our discussion? Jenkins asked, curious about the confused state in which Tony seemed to be. I think I am now in possession of some information that you will be interested in reviewing.
Tony shook his head. He really wasn't thinking clearly.
And secondly, have you heard from Nicole? I haven't seen or heard from her since her friend's murder, and quite frankly, I'm a bit concerned about her safety.
No, I have not heard from Nicole. While that is concerning, and my office isn't in the habit of running down missing persons, Jenkins answered rather sarcastically and coldly.
The senator's tone seemed to jerk Tony back to reality. I wasn't asking you to look for her, and I didn't say she was missing. I just said that I have not seen or heard from her. I was just curious if maybe you had tried to contact her or if she had contacted you over the last few days, Tony snapped back.
As I said, I have not. I've been a bit busy between the president's assassination and now Sipes' murder.
You do remember he was to appear before my committee, Jenkins reminded him as a way to get the conversation away from Nicole's whereabouts.
I'll have Chris call you to set up a time. Thank you, Mr. Schaffer.
Jenkins hung up the phone and added another name to his list. Underneath Nicole, he added Tony Schaffer and drew a line to Norman Sipes.
Chris entered the outer office, and Jenkins placed the pad of paper in the folder, securing it in the drawer of his desk. He stood up and grabbed his coat, meeting Chris in the outer office.
Chris, can you call Tony Schaffer's office back and arrange a time for me to meet with him here in my office? Either later today or tomorrow will be good. I'm heading out to eat lunch with Senator Barker.
What would you like me to do with these?
Chris showed him a thick manila envelope which contained the photographs sent by John from Alaska.
I'll take them with me. Thank you, Chris. This is a job well done, Jenkins said as he exited the door. He was already a few minutes late meeting Senator Barker.
Jenkins waved to Senator Barker as he entered the rotunda, and then the two disappeared from Capitol Hill. Barker had called his wife to arrange for the two of them to have a late lunch in the privacy of Barker's study. Barker's limo met them just outside and whisked them away to the senator's home in Georgetown. Upon their arrival, Mrs. Barker greeted them at the door and they exchanged pleasantries. Then Mrs. Barker said she would have their lunch brought in to them. The two gentlemen walked to the study and Senator Barker closed the door behind him.
So, Bobby, I've been curious about that manila envelope you have there in your hands, Barker started as he sat down in one of the two chairs opposite each other at the table where they would be having their lunch.
As well as I am, Senator, Jenkins answered as he sat down. There was a knock on the door. The butler opened it. The staff brought in two plates of food, which they placed in front of the senators along with their drinks.
Well, this looks very nice. Thank you, Jenkins said to the staff. The staff retreated without a word, shutting the door behind them.
Senator, please call me Larry. While Barker was a senior senator and Jenkins's mentor, he appreciated Jenkins's show of respect by addressing him formally. Barker felt it was time for Jenkins to start considering him a friend as well.
Larry, you certainly remember Nicole Charbonneau.
Yes, Tony Schaffer's associate, and I believe that you have an interest in her, Barker remarked as he began to eat.
Jenkins could almost feel his cheeks blush, but he cleared his throat and focused his thoughts.
I will grant you that she is a very attractive woman, but I assure you there is nothing between us. She came to me the other day with a bit of an issue. It seems that one of her clients claimed that an oil company is drilling on her client's land illegally.
Is her client from Texas?
No, Senator. Her clients are the Inuit tribe living on the North Slope.
Jenkins waited as that information registered with Barker, who stopped eating and looked at Jenkins.
Assured that he had the senator's full attention, Jenkins continued. An oil company is drilling or preparing to drill in Anwar. In this little envelope are photographs of the construction of that illegal rig. They were taken by her clients, and my aide is in Alaska conducting a more thorough investigation.
There was a knock on the door, and Mrs. Barker poked her head around.
I'm sorry to bother you, dear, but Senator Jenkins's aide is on the line. He said it is very important. So important, he told me that the senator wouldn't mind the interruption.
Jenkins stood up as Senator Barker directed him to take the call over at his desk.
Jenkins walked to the desk and answered the phone.
Hello?
Yes.
You did?
It was?
Fabulous. I will dispatch a plane for you right away.
No, no. This evidence is far too precious to risk that.
I'm calling Jeffries, and we'll get you back with FBI protection.
That's right. Great. Thank you.
Jenkins looked at Barker, who gave him an inaudible okay to make the call.
Jeffries, this is Senator Jenkins. I need you to dispatch a plane to Fairbanks, Alaska to pick up my aide. He has some very important information. It has to do with illegal oil drilling in the Anwar, and I need this back quickly.
Yes, that will be fine. Thank you.
I take it that was good news, Barker said as he continued to eat.
Yes, Jenkins answered as he sat back down. He opened the envelope and started looking at the pictures.
Larry, we have everything we need to nail Sipes and his colleagues, and if we play our cards correctly, the country may be so infuriated that it may be a long time before we see another Republican president anytime soon.
Jenkins smiled as he handed some of the photographs over to Senator Barker.
Emerald Isle, North Carolina. Nicole and Sean had just returned from a walk on the beach. Kent greeted them on the boardwalk, asking for help with the groceries he had been dispensed to acquire. They all grabbed what they could and headed up the stairs of the sandcastle and into the kitchen, setting the bags on the counter. Nicole began to put the perishable items in the refrigerator while Sean and Kent returned to the car to retrieve the bottled water, as well as a few six-packs of beer.
I hope you picked up a bottle or two of wine. Nicole doesn't strike me as the type who drinks beer,
Sean remarked as he picked up the two six-packs.
There's a bottle or two in the bag somewhere,
Kent answered, as he closed the trunk on the car and picked up the bottled water he had placed on the ground. They headed up to the kitchen, where Nicole was putting things away. Almost on cue, she looked at the additional items and sighed.
Guess this means I won't be eating out anytime soon. If you play your cards right, I might be able to arrange something.
Sean chimed in with a wink of his eye.
Kent will be able to keep the place secured.
I can't come along.
Sean gave him a look, as if to reinforce the comments about Nicole's interest in him.
I think I'd rather like to be alone with Nicole, he answered.
Nicole moved over to the family room, touching Sean's arm as she passed, and turned on the television. She flipped on the news as it was getting close to 6 o'clock. The lead story caught her attention, and she called out,
Sean, look! That's Nerman Sipes' home.
Sean and Kent moved toward the television as Nicole turned up the volume.
Nerman Sipes, CEO of Sipes Oil Company, was the victim of a car bombing just outside his front door. The police are still investigating, and according to the D.C. police chief, there are many leads that they are investigating at this time. Moving on to our next big story, we bring in meteorologist Sunny Walters to tell us about the tropical storm that is forming off the coast. Sunny?
The scene moved to a young, blonde-haired man who was ready to talk about the storm brewing.
Thanks, Connie. There is a tropical disturbance south of us, and still pretty far out to sea. I don't see this growing into a hurricane. It still is a little bit too early to tell, but there are a couple of factors that will, I believe, hinder that development into a hurricane. But that doesn't mean we won't feel any effects from it. We are going to have 4 to 5 inches of rain, sustained winds possibly as high as 45 miles per hour, lightning, and some spin-up tornadoes may be possible. I don't expect any mandatory evacuations from the beaches, but you may want to make sure you have plenty of bottled water, flashlights, and batteries. I believe that Hatteras will see the worst of this, but there is a slight chance that its path could vary, with the barrier islands a little further south getting hit a bit more. Either way, Hatteras will take the brunt of the storm as it moves up the coast. We'll have more in about 15 minutes, including the conditions over the next couple of days.
Nicole turned the sound down.
Well, that was just full of good news. It's nothing we didn't expect regarding Sipes,
Sean said.
I'm more concerned about that storm.
It's just a little wind and rain, Nicole joked.
Is anybody hungry?